Podcast for Saturday, February 13th, 2010. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Boop-a-dee-boo.
Hello. And Graham Thickens is off. He's participating in a protest pro-healthcare and pro-abortion over at the state capitol. So, just
really?
Kidding. If you know Graham's politics, that's probably highly unlikely, but
probably, yeah. Well, when pigs are flying, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, exactly. So how you guys doing on this frosty morning?
Good.
Good.
It's wonderful. You know, we have it's beautiful frost on the trees. My wife was out taking pictures this morning. So
oh really?
Actually, she was doing it from the window of our upper floor. So rather than go outside.
Yeah, there's something wrong with that she should be out there in the elements. Oh, man. Well, I blame
the online generation.
Really?
It's easier to do from your office than to actually do
it. Yeah, exactly. Forget getting that vitamin D. We don't need any stinking vitamin D.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's talk about SMB, the social media breakfast that you went to, Phil, on Friday. How was that?
It was great. We had a good time. Was at the lovely Kelly Inn in St. Paul. I'd never been there before. And we talked politics and social media. And when in reality, it kind of came down to we talked political journalism and social media.
Okay.
So there was very little talk about effective use of social media by elected officials to actually communicate with their constituency, which is a question I brought up after listening about. Yeah, I find it sometimes very frustrating when I hear journalists talk about using things like Twitter and Facebook to, I don't know, virtually keep tabs on our elected officials rather than, talk about what you can do as you know, how this enables a sort of a Web 2.0 government. And that was the way it went. So we talked all about heard about, you know, using Twitter to find out that Tim Pawlenty was in Washington and why was he in Washington and blah, blah, blah.
Got it. Okay.
But again, as always, a full house, but 350 folks was
really nice
to see a lot of new faces. There were a lot of new faces, young faces, people looking to get involved. We heard about some other groups, and I'm sorry, I don't have them off the top of my head. A group focused on younger folks in the new media space. And again, was just a well-attended event. And I got a parking ticket. So how bad can that be? myself and many other folks. I seem to have perfected myself, though. I have perfected the ability to get a parking ticket at social media breakfast, no matter where they are. You could have this baby in the middle of a free parking lot, and I could figure out a way to get a parking ticket.
Yeah, but the most important question I think that listeners will want to know, Phil, is how was the bacon?
Bacon was fine. There was bacon. There was muffins. There was coffee.
Right.
But it was good.
Excellent.
And, you know, Rick Mon and Michael Roventine continue to put on a great event. And we need more time to discuss, more time to ask questions. There was a lot of talk, a lot of questioning from Blois Olson, who hosted or moderated the panel, did a great job at asking questions. But there was a lot of everybody answered every question. So we used up a lot of time doing that. But at the same time, there seemed to be a little bit more time on the front end to actually do networking and chatting face to face. And that was very fun.
Well, speaking of social media, I caught your video you did with Chris Brogan a week or two ago when he was in town.
Yes.
So how did, can you talk about how you got him over to get a Juicy Lucy at, what is it, the 5-7 or whatever?
The 5-8 Club.
5-8 Club, that's right.
Chris is an incredibly approachable guy, and I've always been, or admired Chris for the fact that there are a myriad of social media experts. And if you could see me right now, I would be doing the air quotes that I have shown up online in the midst of this revolution, again, air quotes. But I think Chris, of all of them, actually really is the most accessible and the most desirous of sharing what he has learned. He gives away probably 90% of what he knows. Admittedly, he makes a pretty darn good living off that other 10% as well. But, you know, when he was coming to town, it was just a matter of, you know, he and I follow each other, and I just pinged him and said, hey, how about a tweet up? And we scheduled a tweet up, and he was very gracious and showed up on that Monday evening in the middle of a snowstorm, but basically said, let's get together for lunch and chat. And he said, great. He was staying near the airport, and it was a chance to do some sort of something landmarkish. I think the Juicy Lucy is landmarkish, though there is some debate as to whether the 5-8 Club is the home of the Juicy Lucy or the invention of the Juicy Lucy. But
oh, really?
Yeah, Matt's up the street. I think the name is Matt's.
Oh, it is Matt's. On Cedar, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
The difference is the Juicy Lucy at Matt's doesn't have an I in the Juicy, and the Juicy Lucy at the 5-8 has an I in Juicy. But No matter what, just go ahead and order the portable defibrillator to come right along with that thing. So
blue cheese or cheddar?
I did the cheddar. I did the cheddar.
So. Okay, I always get the blue cheese one for some reason there.
Yeah, I've never really kind of ventured into that. But, you know, Chris and I had a wonderful time just chatting about social media, about, you know, all sorts of things. He's a very interesting fellow to talk to. And then I just said, hey, you know, give me a couple of minutes and you can tell me what's going on, and whipped out the old flip camera. And there it was. So
I'll put a link in the show notes so people can watch it.
Well, thanks.
Kind of stood out to me is it looked like it was just like you and Chris sitting there having a burger and talking.
Well, we were.
Oh, okay.
That's all we were doing.
So. That's cool. That's cool. I didn't get a sense there was anybody else there.
No, there wasn't.
Oh, okay.
Just the two of us. So.
Very, very cool.
Yeah, we had a great time, and he was very gracious. You know, what has always amazed me about Chris is the man is an incredibly prolific writer and content producer. I mean, the guy has got posts going out 2-3 times a day. He's tweeting. He's everywhere. Admittedly, he has some assistance in getting some of that coordinated. But I asked him about that, and he said, well, I don't spend any time on the phone. I don't like the phone, he said, because it tends to make you be a slave to a certain time of day because you don't want to call anybody too early or too late. He said, I stay up till 2-3 in the morning, you know, doing a lot of things and getting ahead of the game when other people, and then I also do that during the day. So he gets a lot of stuff done. I don't think he sleeps a lot.
Huh.
But a very nice guy, and I thought had some very good stuff to say, and very, you know, you're always also drawn to people that you agree with, and I agree with a lot of the stuff that he talks about. So I'm very intrigued about this third tribe concept, his new venture with some other bloggers, which is there are two tribes in online world, those that are putting out content because it needs to be put out there, that it's the right thing to do, that they need to share this information. And then there's the other tribe, you know, or the purists, the one that look at, you know, this is what the channel is for, is to talk back and forth. It's a communication builder. It's a relationship builder. And then the other tribe, which is those that want to seek a way to make money at doing that sort of a thing. And they've established this concept of the third tribe, those people that really kind of want to pull the best from both worlds. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if you and Chris got to this because it wasn't on the video, but one of the things that has really struck me lately is as I scroll through Google Reader or I follow certain thought leaders on Twitter, it feels like more and more people are throwing out links to what they're calling profound articles or go read this post. You know, Joe Schmedlap says, here's the top 10 things you need to know about being effective with enterprise social media. And you go there and you read the post and it's interesting and all of that. But there are literally dozens of those every single day. And did Chris talk at all about sort of standing out from the crowd, you know, the sorts of things that he does to essentially build a brand that people are attracted to. Did you guys get into that at all as a discussion?
Not really. We didn't get into that level. I think it's a topic of a lot of what he does. I wasn't able to get to see his presentation at the Reputations gathering that he was actually in town for because of a sick child. But no, we didn't really talk too much about that. But I think that's what I'm seeing as Twitter is rapidly becoming a bookmarking service or a clip service where you get a lot of ability to see, here's a link, check this out. Here's a link, check this out. A lot of curation, I guess, is going on there.
You know, what would be nice to see is a Twitter client that sort of would automatically filter the cruft out of the feeds. Like, it's
define cruft, Mr. L.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Well, it's like, I'm guilty of this as well, but how many people are interested in, where I'm at that particular time? If you're near me, so geographically near where I'm at, you would be, but if you're in California, you could really care less. So stuff like that. So the status updates that are automatically generated from Gowalla and Foursquare that aren't pertinent to the person, and mm-hmm. maybe a lot of the side conversations that aren't that are really between two people and don't apply to others. I'm not sure what kind of technology you would apply here to be able to filter it, but it would be interesting because there's so much noise in the signal of Twitter, and it's a problem. And obviously you can use groups and other things and certain clients to do a little bit of that. But I think that would be kind of interesting to see if something could be done that would clean out your feed and make it more relevant to you.
Well, I also think that there's a certain amount of self-filtering that you have to go through. And again, I think this is the biggest issue with this is on Twitter. We talked, Steve and I talked a little bit about yesterday, this concept of when Twitter first rolled out, it was a good Twitter etiquette to whenever anybody ever followed you, you followed them back. And I think that is a trap to clutter up your stream. I think you really have to pay attention to who you think, offers relevant information to you, who talks about the things you're interested in and shares links to the things that you're interested in. And I wish that there was some sort of a way, maybe this is some sort of a prompt that you would get saying, you followed this person now for 30 days. Do you want to keep following them or not? That would give you that ability to sort of continuously clean out your feed and update your feed.
Well, what's interesting that you just brought that up is here's where I thought you were going to go with this, because this is where my head is going. There are people that I follow, and I would put you guys and I would put Graham in that bucket, Tim O'Reilly, Chris Brogan, certainly people like that, who point to things that they think are interesting, that they think their followers would be interested in. And I would love to have a place that would aggregate the links, not all the comments, but would just simply aggregate the links of the people whom I follow. And I don't know
something
if there's something
that sort of harvested your stream and just put the links out there.
Well, just said, here are Tim O'Reilly's links and for today or for the week or for the month. And here's all the links that he had. Here's all of Phil Wilson's, Tim, here's all Tim Elliott's links. So all the things that you pointed to that you thought were interesting and relevant or important, and maybe slice and dice them by hashtag or something like that, because there's so much value. I mean, here was the good news when Google Reader, when I finally decided on using that instead of NewsGator, was here I had the people that I follow and would read their blogs and aggregate their blogs together in Google Reader. I thought, okay, now I've got the crux of thought leadership in technology sitting here in Google Reader. And I don't feel that way anymore, because a lot of the people that I follow are putting a lot of really great intrinsic value into these links that they're throwing out in Twitter, and they're not aggregating themselves on their own blog. or somehow in their own profile, and they're just gone. They're in the ether somewhere.
Well, it sounds to me like you need to be talking with Garrick Van Buren, who keeps talking about, you know, bringing Curate back. So is that what it was?
No, collect.
Not Curate.
Collect.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Garrick. Collect. Because he keeps talking about bringing, you know, refocusing on that and seeing what he can develop in that space. But I think you're right. I mean, I think anything that can help you self-edit or help you edit,
because
you spend a great deal of time looking at things, you'll pop it open, you'll read a paragraph and go, well, this is not really interesting to me. Or, you know, you actually can spend a good deal of time. If you get up first thing in the morning, a lot of your links are already aggregated for you, because a lot of people get up early in the morning and go out, start looking through their newsreader and then start tweeting links. It's like, okay, well, you know, kind of spread these out over the day, folks. Don't just do it all in an hour every morning.
Well, I found a Flickr image by a guy who had aggregated all these logos from social media companies and Web 2.0 companies, and I did a quick posterous post. Where are you paying attention? And you know, this woman that wrote the tech meme article, the F you Google, I use my private Gmail account to email my boyfriend and my mother, and it was all about how her ex automatically followed her and all these people were following her and so on. And there's a lot of articles right now on tech meme about Google Buzz and all the stuff that's going on. So there's a lot of this automatic attempt at making connections between all these social media sites. And I know what you said about, Tim, about not showing your location and seeing that as cruft. But how can I stalk you if I don't know where you are?
Well, you know? If you're geographically near me, that would be interesting. If you're not, then that wouldn't. That's what I'm saying. There has to be some level of location-based filtering, which would be easy to do. And then there needs to be some other kind of way to look at the kinds of tweets that are, you know, maybe the informational tweets with links to other articles. Those are more important to you. So you say, yeah, I want to see more of those. And maybe the kind of, you know, snarky comments on the opening ceremonies of the Olympics is not something you want.
Right.
And so you can dial that back a little bit. Although I did appreciate your snarky comments last night, Steve.
You know, I was trying to be positive because I actually was uplifted for most of that. But then there were so many opportunities to throw funny things out. I just couldn't help myself.
Yeah, I was going to tweet about that. You know, where is, William Shatner and Celine Dion in this?
Yeah.
I mean, after they march in with Donald Sutherland with the flag and Anne Murray and all these, I'm like, okay, there's got to be some.
Where was Geddy Lee of Rush?
Some big Canadians, you know, that are going to be lighting the torch. And then it's Gretzky, which is like, that totally makes sense. You know, he's an athlete, et cetera, you know.
Yep.
So well, I was kind of disappointed there was no Celine Dion sighting.
Where was Geddy Lee of Rush?
Well, where was Neil Young? I mean, they
anybody from Second City, Canada, anybody.
Well, that's why I threw out the Bob and I said Dave. Bob, it's Bob, Doug. Bob and Doug McKenzie.
You said Bob and Dave?
Yeah, so it sort of took away a little bit from the joke, but it's like, where are Bob and Doug McKenzie?
In the Twitterverse, nobody can hear you laugh. Don't worry.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, that's funny. It's I was really fascinated by some of the tweets that came out after social media breakfast. I mean, tweets about your question, Phil, about how that was one of the most profound ones of the event. But my question is that
as we talk about this aggregation of links and information, I mean, right there is an opportunity for any elected official to share. You know, where are they garnering knowledge? Share that with their constituency. So, I mean, to me, that offers a real opportunity. But I think what came out of that also, that discussion, is that just like every other public medium, most of our elected officials are so worried from a political standpoint about what they say and what could be you know, what could be garnered by what they say. What they tweet is the same sort of thing, or what they put on their Facebook page is the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which I think is a pity that that's, but that's just because of our TMZ culture that we've grown accustomed to. You know, we follow people not to necessarily learn good things about them, but to look for the bad.
Well, it's just like when Obama went to the House Republican caucus and gave a 20-25 minute speech and then spoke for an hour, and it was televised. And
you did question and answer. Yeah.
Yeah. And I decided that I was going to force myself to watch it. And I watched the entire thing, and I was fascinated by his command of the issues and his knowledge, and realizing there's no way that George W. could have done that for 5 minutes, let alone an hour. But
no, George W. riffing, not going to happen.
That's not going to happen. But what I was fascinated by was just his ability to do that, but also that it was available, that the video was available and it was out there and all of that. And it really got away from the soundbite culture, where, you know, everybody wants to leap on some sentence that you've used, you know, and then the whole positioning thing of death panels for healthcare and so on and so forth. The long form stuff is a way to kind of get away from that. And yet most people don't watch it. Most people aren't going to sit and spend an hour going through it. I think it's really interesting. That's why when Greg Littman, he wrote a post on Eric Hansen's site. I think Eric invited him to do a post. And for those of you who don't know who Greg Littman is, he's a producer at WCCO for news and sports. And his brother, Scott Littman, does the Minnesota Cup along with his buddy, Dan Mallon. And Greg wrote a rant and rave about, can social media save TV? And I went through it and I realized how enjoyable it's been sort of following the Twitter stream around events, the Super Bowl, you know, during the elections, last night at the Olympic opening ceremony and things of that nature. You know, if you're going to watch TV, it's really kind of fun to have that back channel going on. And I remember, and you guys probably experienced this too, being in events as far back as 2000, where I'd be at these conferences where there was an IRC back channel, internet relay chat back channel. You'd have to kind of know the secret way to get in and where the servers were. And you'd have to have some geeks tell you how to get in, and then you could get in, and only a few people had internet connections. So it was kind of this closed group. And then it got bigger when Wi-Fi was more and more available in conferences, you know, in 2004-05 and so forth. You could have this back channel, and there was this stream going on of consciousness that was kind of fun to watch, because people were in real time critiquing the speakers. And then when what's her name? Jane McGonigal. No. It was
Katie Lang.
No, she's a pop.
She doesn't wear shoes, you know.
Yeah, I know. Anyway,
even in the winter.
Anyway, this woman, oh my gosh, I wish I could remember what her.
The keynote thing at South by Southwest?
Yeah, where she was so taken aback by, Dana Boyd. Talk.
And
she
was so taken aback. The quote interview with Zuckerberg.
No, Mark Zuckerberg. That was. The woman that.
But the point was
Sarah Lacey. But
the point was Dana, that she was completely destroyed during the presentation by the Twitter back channel.
And Dana Boyd talked about how she was giving this talk and how she was so horribly distracted,
right?
Of Twitter.
This is one of those things that just drives me nuts. Twitter back channel is supposed to be back channel. Now, I'm assuming, I'm not exactly sure which discussion. You guys aren't exactly sure which presentation you're talking about. But
we're talking about two different.
Yeah. So
same thing.
We're talking about situations where the Twitter back channel was displayed on a screen, right?
Right. Or at least in one of those. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. That's stupid. Okay. Back channel is back channel and shouldn't be put on front. It should not be put up front.
Yeah, but Phil, if you've spoken in front of a crowd, you know, tech crowd recently, everyone is not looking at you. They're looking at their iPhones or Blackberries, and they're tweeting about what you're saying.
And me as a presenter can't do anything about that. But do not introduce that back channel into my presentation, because then it's not back channel. It overtakes the presentation.
Yeah.
I have never been a fan of adding. It's a distraction, because all of a sudden you've taken the spotlight off the presenter and allowed other people to insert themselves into their time and topic. Insert themselves by saying, okay, if I tweet stupid stuff, or I tweet, I can be a jerk. I can be, argumentative. I can do anything I want, because it'll post to that screen. Nobody will take it out of that screen. And that is not fair to your speaker. It shows an incredible disrespect for somebody that you've asked to share information on a topic. Sorry, can you tell? You hit a hot button here?
Yeah.
It's wrong. It's completely wrong. That's why it's called back channel.
So we're not going to see you project the Twitter back channel at Mobile March, Phil?
No, not at all. Not at all. If you're interested, look, it's difficult enough in this day and age for a presenter to keep the attention of the audience because of these other distractions. I kind of like the concept of being able to see what people are thinking when I'm not at the event. But I also know, as a presenter, as a performer, as a, somebody who is taking the stage to talk seriously about something or not seriously, I hate the fact that distractions are out there. And I think a lot of people that are tweeting these things may not necessarily be getting the full benefit of a speaker, because they're only, once again, pulling out a soundbite, and then they disengage from the next point to tweet that soundbite.
Well, you know, what's interesting is this guy, Craig Neal, who is with HeartlandCircle.com. He used to be the publisher of the Etney Reader, and this guy's been around a long time, teaches this course called The Art of Convening. And I've been in a lot of these different events where there's 120, 150 people, and everybody sits in a huge circle. And so you can actually look at one another. And in the center of the circle is, maybe a bouquet of flowers or something. I mean, something that you can look at while you're sitting in the circle. But trust me, nobody's got their cell phone out. Nobody's got a laptop out tweeting and so on and so forth. And he does this for companies where he goes in and he teaches how to convene a meeting. And it's a meeting where all the energy is sort of flattened, so you don't have one person in power. Because when you're sitting in a circle, there really is no power. There's no central focal point other than the center of the circle, which is kind of all of us. And it's just been a really fascinating thing to experience. And I've been thinking about that within the context of, you know, social media breakfasts and other meetings is how to bring everybody in and have people, you know, have their opinions matter and, you know, maybe break up into small groups and then reconvene back in the big circle, which is something I've experienced that works pretty well. But to your point, it really is. It's cruel to the speaker
it's awful to the speaker.
Worked hard and you know, is up there and is, for a lot of people, it's really difficult anyway to do it. And then to not have people pay any attention, because it's too easy to be anonymous, to sit in the back and, you know, make snarky comments and all that. Yeah,
I often harken back to the days that I spent time, you know, 3-4 hours a day on the air. And if I were on the air and I could hear everybody in their car, everybody at their office, everybody, you know, with their headsets on, if I could hear every comment they said about everything I said or presented on the air, it would drive me nuts. Cause I was like, I mean, cause we all yell at the radio. We all, talk to our TV. You know, wouldn't it drive the people nuts that are coming out of that box? Wouldn't it drive you nuts if you could hear it all?
Well, so I shouldn't tell you what the back channel chat is, that what Tim just said about you.
I can only imagine.
But that's, I did not say anything.
You know, the thing, what's really interesting is, you know, anybody, and we've all done a presentation. Everybody on this podcast has done a presentation of some sort. When we finish our presentation, we leave our meeting, we leave our conference or whatever, and we're constantly going over in our head, I wonder how that went. I wonder how that went. Well, now we can find out, and it's not always pretty.
Right, right. Yeah, that's so, very, very true.
But I apologize that I got off on that rant, guys. I don't know, but we were talking about Greg Littman's post on TV.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, and or media, and I think that it does bode well for quote unquote legacy media, air quotes again, that you can now participate and you can now talk with your friends, even though they're not in the room. But I can also tell you, I can't remember what was the event where they actually showed the tweets on the screen. There was a TV event not too long ago. I don't remember what it was. That drove me nuts.
Well,
to see all the tweets scrolling along the bottom, that would be disastrous, I would think.
So
the ability to talk to your friends in other places.
Well, but what it's done is it's created this this communal kind of event Twitter has, where you're watching events, and from a marketing perspective, I think that everybody pretty much missed a huge opportunity to participate when all those ads were going on. I mean, if the people at Budweiser and, you know, the various advertisers.
Oh, I'm sure they were.
No, they didn't. They really didn't engage the audience that was talking about their all the ads in real time.
Well, I don't know if they should, though, but I think that I'm sure they gleaned a lot of information out of that tweet stream or out of the Facebook status scene. I'm sure they got a lot of information, but
right.
You know why
that they're not plugged in and they're a bunch of bozos is what.
No, they're plugged in. But what would they say? What would you say? I mean, when you do a focus group, you don't put somebody from the company in the middle of the focus group to either be the object of discussion or someone that's put in the position of having to justify their decisions. That's not what you do. You want to know what people really feel and how they really are reacting to something. And they're not going to do it to a representative of that company. They'll do it to their friends, but they'll react to their friends, but they're not going to react to their company. I don't think a company always has to inject themselves into the comment stream. Engaging is very important, yes, but could you imagine somebody from Budweiser trying to answer somebody's question as to why did Budweiser do this? Good Lord, all of a sudden these people would stop watching the Super Bowl, or they would stop watching the commercial, or they would completely forget about their experience with the commercial, and they would all of a sudden be engaged in a conversation of, you know, why we used a longhorn steer instead of a heifer. You know, that's crazy.
Yeah, but you know, to the point of what Greg Littman was talking about in connecting Twitter to old media, traditional media, sorry, Greg. I'll point back to a post that I did just a hair over 2 years ago on my own blog called MSNBC's Awesome Super Tuesday Primary Coverage. And I've got a screenshot of the super dashboard. And it was real-time streaming video. It was live updates to the coverage. It was live updates to the race results and so forth, and showing how many delegates each one had and so on and so forth. And I could easily visualize a Twitter feed. So all the, you know, you just go out and say all the hashtags with this are going to come into this Twitter feed. And so now you'd have yet another component in there that would be
on the screen,
on the screen live updates, but not necessarily, but this is on your computer.
I think it's interesting, but I also think, and I always try to hearken it, you know, what do real people think? We're geeks. Let's face it. And a lot of the people at Social Media Breakfast and those that are in the social media profession or enthusiasts of social media are geeks. We love all that information and all that ability to see. But, you know, I think that most people look at that as noise. I just think it's noise to them.
I would say you're probably right.
The super dashboard drove me nuts. I was not interested in it.
The Super Tuesday dashboard thing?
Yeah, it was too much.
Well, it would be if you were watching television and just watching the results come in. But for me, my kids were doing homework, so I had to go upstairs with my laptop, and I was able to watch the stream and all that on my laptop. And
you know what I would suggest?
And so that was a big.
I think you need to go upstairs more with your wife.
Let's not go there. She's in Europe. She's in Europe until tomorrow, but she does come home on Valentine's Day. Hey, speaking of Valentine's Day,
now wait a minute.
I'm going to put a link.
We tend to segue a little bit, and I want to go there, but
on purpose.
Have we covered this topic sufficiently for everyone?
Tim,
yeah, no, I think we did.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
I'm still not exactly clear what your beef is, Phil. I mean, you really haven't made a case.
What?
I'm just kidding.
What? Yeah, don't do that, because you'll start all over.
Were you too busy tweeting to hear me?
You've been very busy in your, very clear in your opinion.
Well, you know, look, that's my beef. And I look at it from the participant's standpoint. I think that you do a disservice to somebody if you introduce a distraction to what they're talking about.
Well, I agree, but I also agree, getting back to the post a little bit, that, you know, Twitter is creating something around these events that results in more people viewing live television events.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I think it's great. And I love doing it when there's nobody else in the room. Don't get me wrong. I think that the concept of what Greg was talking about in his post is right. He's right. And it's great. But it's not scrolling along the bottom of the screen for all the world to see. You know,
no,
you're sharing your thoughts with mostly the people that you are interested in sharing your thoughts with. Indoor Twitter community. You know, I care very much what S. Borsch has to say about something, or Tim Elliott has to say about something, but I could give less, I could care less what, you know, Puss Bucket 103 has to say. So I don't want to see that scrolling across my screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But it's also on a second, but it's also
a very intelligent guy.
Yeah. Right. But it's also on a secondary device. So it's not scrolling across a TV screen, although TV people want you to, you know, buy a new Vizio with all the internet stuff built into it and so forth. But
have you tried that stuff, though, really? I mean, at all? I mean, have you tried to do Twitter or Facebook on your TV?
I have, because I've upstairs in the family room, I've got that Mac Mini hooked to the HDTV, and then downstairs I've got a Roku box.
His wife is not home, not near enough.
That's right.
Right. Well,
that's
right. I mean, the Xbox 360 recently rolled out those features, and
it's horrible. Know,
I've tried it, and it's like, why would I want to do this?
Well,
I'd much rather sit there with my phone or my iPod Touch, which has a much better interface for such things, and do that rather than monkey around with my Xbox controller.
Well, it's like going back to SMS with a telephone keypad. You know, where you're doing four times to put a letter in.
We've got one of those keyboards, but it's not a great experience.
Yeah.
So I just don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so why would I want to do Twitter on my TV while I'm watching something annoying the rest of my family when I can just do it myself on my little screen?
Right.
You know?
Yep. Yep. I'm with you.
Anyway, but.
And I know this may, again, get us off on another little rabbit trail, but do you think that the human brain in those that have grown up in this time of multiple channels going on at any given time, a la the Super Tuesday dashboard, a lot of things going on, do you think that those people that only know that kind of quote-unquote noise can better process it? Are their brains able to better process multi streams at any given time than, say, somebody like, you know, people like you and I who saw the birth of the cell phone, you know, and are picking this stuff up as it comes out rather than just being exposed to it as it already is? Do you think the human brain differs?
Yes.
Remember when we used to have to carry around a bunch of, dimes because you'd want to go to these things called payphones.
Heard them. Yep,
and you put like a dime in to make a call.
Yeah.
And then if you had to do like long distance, so you had to have quarters and stuff. And it was just you had more change in your pocket in those days.
When
people wanted to get a hold of you and if you were on the road, they had to call an answering service.
Yes.
And put a message in, and then they would maybe page you where you get like little numbers on the stupid screen, and then you'd have to find a payphone to call your answering service back.
Do right. you remember when
those were the days?
I'm telling you.
No, here's how I think the human brain has changed, and I'll have everybody do this with us as they're listening to this, unless they're driving.
Okay, kids.
Close your eyes. Think about a letter that you wrote on your computer or a proposal or something that you did, and now visualize in your mind where that is located. Okay. And some people will say, okay, well, it's on my desktop in a folder called letters. And then inside that folder is 2010. And so all the letters in 2010 are inside that folder. Okay. So already cognitively people are virtually placing digital data in a visualized space. And so I got into this whole discussion with a guy who's a neurologist who's doing research at the University of Wisconsin-Madison about brain changes with education. It's all around education, but it's also about meditation and all this other stuff. And it was all about how there are brain changes going on relative to people cognitively visualizing things that don't exist. So in the same way that physicists sort of get quantum mechanics, even though you can't see it, we are putting things in places that we think exist because they have visual representations. But, you know, it's a path name in a computer and it's a bunch of ones and zeros. It doesn't, you know, there really isn't a folder on your desktop with the letters in it. Or folders nested within other folders. And I think the same thing holds true with social media and things that are happening conceptually with talking to people and making these connections, even though you've never met them. And I think so far it's been mostly trustworthy. Most people's Google profiles are real. Most people's Facebook profiles are real. Yes, there are ones that are suspect that you kind of wonder, is this a real person? Or when somebody follows me on Twitter and I go and see who they are and there's no link and there's no way to find out who the human is behind the Twitter account, I'll either not follow or I'll block them, one of the two. But for the most part, most people are standing up and they're being real. And I think it is making really huge, profound changes cognitively in how people approach things. Or even look at how kids just take to digital technology like a duck to water. I mean, I remember when I had a BlackBerry and my son was like 4 years old, I gave it to him and he starts manipulating it and going through the menu structure on it. And it's like, how did you know how to do that? And he said, well, it's just like this. And he has some, I had a little game for him that he could go through. And it's just, you know, it's a non-issue. I mean, he sits down with a Mac or a PC or an Xbox, with an iPhone, anything. And it's just, you know, you just kind of look at it and you figure out how the menu structure is and how it was put together. And it's just a non-issue. So, I do think there are big changes.
To answer your question, Phil, I'd say yes.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tim.
Tim is so concise.
Yeah, no, I would say that there have been changes, and I see this with my kids who can do multiple things at the same time and not appear to be distracted and appear to be able to process all these streams of information at the same time. So I think the human brain has changed or is evolving because of all this stuff.
Can I get me one of them?
It doesn't, but I think it has to do with the times that you're growing up in. I mean, if we'd grown up in the 40s, we would have a very different worldview than we do since we grew up in my case, the 60s. I think that all of us probably did grow up in that era. We have a different
more of the 70s than the 60s.
Worldview than than people that are growing up in the 90s, you know?
Yeah.
So that I mean, it's people will adapt to technology, and people have shown that over millennia. It's just that in the last 50 years, it seems like the technology has radically changed every 10 years. And it's and the velocity of that change is happening a lot faster.
Accelerating
than it
ever change
has before.
Yep.
Yes, it's accelerating change thing. I don't know where I saw that before.
I don't know.
Anyway, some guy named Borsch.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know Steve is going to do the. He's going to drop the hammer on us here. So I'll help try.
We got to wrap up. Yeah.
Get things to.
We're not going to talk about Buzz.
Let me. Let's talk just briefly about Buzz, Tim.
Yeah. No. I think this is the new aggregator. I think that this will replace Google Reader for me.
Huh. Okay.
Because what you can do, because what you can do is you can go in and you can basically follow, just like you can in on Twitter, you can follow people, but what you're following is you're following their entire live stream as opposed to just their Twitter stream. So you're following their blog posts and their Google Reader favorites and their, you know, their tweets and various other things. So it's a way to aggregate everything together. And I'm seeing that, you know, blogs and companies are doing this. So like TechCrunch, I'm following TechCrunch now. So now I don't have to necessarily see their stuff in a aggregator, which I fire up maybe twice a week now, because I just don't have the time to actually go through and read blogs the way I used to. But I'm constantly processing email, and the genius of Buzz is it's integrated into Gmail.
Right.
So it will get your attention. So I thought it was kind of a stupid idea when I first got it, but the more I'm seeing it, the more I'm using it, I can see some utility here.
Well, I really can too, but it's hard for me to manage stuff. Like I follow Pete Cashmore from Mashable, and so sometimes I'll click on Buzz, and there'll be like, you know, 15 very, very long threads with Pete Cashmore and all these people chiming in. And so I'll have to mute the post because it's like, okay, well, I read the post. I've already formed my own opinion. I don't need to see what 97 other people are saying. And so my ability to manage that sort of thing, because I don't want to not follow Pete, or in your case, like you're talking about following tech. I mean, I want to keep following certain people, but there are times when I would like to be able to just collapse a conversation without muting it. So if I want to go back to it, I can do it. Now I can't. If I mute it, it's gone. And so there are some things like that that don't really work very well. There's also no ability, like in Google Reader, to star or to favorite or things like that. So like you just did one, Tim, how to integrate Facebook, Twitter, and Buzz into your Gmail. You did this from Google Reader. And that's really interesting, but now I have to go to Google Reader if I want to star that. I know there's,
you
can like it, but that's,
you can comment on it.
Yeah, I know I can, but that's still, it doesn't give me enough management capability.
How quickly will they add that capability?
I'm sure they will.
How hard will it be to put stars and share links at the bottom there?
I don't think it will.
There's plenty of room, that's for sure.
Well, there is plenty of room. And I'm also surprised by, you know, when I get email now, I often will view it as a Google Doc, because I know that then it'll be saved in Google Docs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just all of a sudden, it's just that once it parses it, boom, it's there. So now I've got it. Now I can go back and refer to it by date. You know, and there are things like that where I never got into Evernote. And I know a lot of people love Evernote. And I never did, but I've got digital breadcrumbs laying all over God's creation. And I literally sometimes will remember something that I read, and then somebody needs it and I want to give it to them. And for the life of me, I can't find it. I mean, I'm just all over the place now. So
there's a technology, Steve, called Spotlight that helps you find stuff.
Yeah, I know. I know there are lots of tools. Well, anyway, I think I agree with you. I think it's got great promise. I still, you know, get concerned about some of the people. I look at some of my followers and it's like, who are you? So that's the only thing.
Well, it's a little bit interesting the way that it shows up, where Buzz starts out, because it's not like the 30 people that I'm following are not the 30 people that I would think that I would automatically follow. And I would think that there's a lot more people that I would like to follow that I have to now go in here and manually do, which I just don't understand how it creates these links.
Well, here's the other thing too, is this is my own belief, but supposedly Google is only looking at your Gmail account to be able to determine who you might be interested in following. And yet I've not emailed Pete Cashmore. I don't get emails from Pete Cashmore, and yet he shows up as one of my first ones, and he's, you know, just all over Google Buzz. And so they've got to also be looking at my other Google accounts. They've got to be looking at Reader specifically, I would think, and making some decisions algorithmically on other people I'm paying attention to. I don't know. I'm sure they're not going to reveal it too much, but anyway, so I think you guys should go and play. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to a perfect Valentine for everyone's sweetie. Now, this is for guys. You know, if you want to give your sweetie something that is perfect for social media breakfast people, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to that.
The social media thong? Is that what you're...
No, it's a bouquet of bacon.
Of bacon.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. And then I'm also going to put a link into the Wikipedia article about St. Valentine, because I just looked at that just for grins. I've never looked at it. I didn't really know who St. Valentine was. I never, ever looked at it. And as I'm reading through this, I'm thinking, wow, what a stretch for this guy to suddenly be the patron saint of love. Why are we now giving cards and chocolates and flowers? Oh my gosh.
Well, anyway, we'll look forward to that.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
There you go.
You're such a tease.
All right.
All right. Hey,
you guys have a great weekend, eh?
You have a great weekend, and have fun, and happy Valentine's Day to all.
Indeed.
But what are you getting me, Phil? Are you?
I've got you the thong.
Thanks. Thanks, dear. All right, guys. Have a good one.
Have a good one, guys.
Take care.
Yep.
Bye.